Okay. We'll get a meeting, we'll get started with this meeting of the Highlands Development Credit Bank. I'm going to call this meeting to order. This meeting was noticed by Open Public Meetings Act. We'll be doing roll call. We just want to introduce ourselves, like normal. Ted, you want to start?
Hello, I'm Ted Maglione from Greenberg.
Scott Whitenack.
Dale Davis.
Mike Howell.
And on the phone we have Susan, are you on the phone?
Yeah.
Okay. And who else was on the phone? Ralph Siegel, you're on the phone?
I can barely hear you, but I'm on the phone.
Okay. Thank you. Please start the meeting now.
I'd ask our HDC members to use the mics because when the air conditioning fan is on, unfortunately it's very difficult for people in the room to hear, as you'll see, nodding there. So, and then on the phone, we'll do our best to have you hear us as well, and we ask that also that you speak up as well, please.
Okay, at this time, can we have the Pledge of Allegiance?
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay. So thanks for coming out, everyone. I know we unfortunately missed last month's meeting, so hopefully everyone's been having a good summer. Thanks for coming out on a great day like today. I just thought it was the last place that most people want to be sitting right now. That's dedication. So we can move right into, I have nothing else to report, so we'll just move right into Eileen's report.
Great, and I have a PowerPoint to take us through. Oh, sorry, the minutes.
No, I'm sorry. We can take action. I'd like to accept a motion to accept the minutes of our last meeting.
So,
motion, do I have a second?
Second.
Any comments on that? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions?
Abstained.
Ralph abstains.
Maybe I should abstain.
Okay. And two of them abstain.
Just for members, future, we have enough votes for now, but for members in the future, you're allowed to vote on matters, even if you weren't at the meeting, as long as you think that the minutes are properly reflected. We have enough votes.
Okay.
So the motion passes. Okay, at this point, we can start with Eileen's report.
Thank you. I started with a PowerPoint here just to give you an update. What I'm going to do in this report is give you a plan conformance update because there are issues obviously that relate to the Transfer Developer Rights Program, and then with Jeff's aid, take you through where we are on the HDC bank operating procedures, hoping that you'll be able to take action on those today, and then talk through with you the TDR program conservation restrictions and changes that have been made since we've last seen you. So starting off with the municipal plan conformance update, we now have 75, it went up by one in recent weeks with the addition of Frelinghuysen. 75 of the 88 Highlands municipalities have filed a notice of intent, which means basically they are working with us to study plan conformance mandatory for their preservation area lands, those municipalities that have preservation area lands, because they have to have a petition into us by December 8th of this year, a conforming petition. And the other municipalities with planning areas, the notice of intent for them is non-binding, but that notice allowed them to enter into the plan conformance grant program so that they could get the information necessary to make an informed decision for their municipalities. 72 municipalities and 4 counties have applied for an initial assessment grant. Many of those have been delivered to us at this point in time. 74 municipalities have filed the 2009 plan conformance grant application. Sir. I don't suppose it's an actual formal opting out. What it is, first of all, for the preservation area lands, they have to conform, and that's the end of it. They're statutorily obliged. For planning area municipalities, first of all, there's no date by which they have to conform, though some, because of COA-related issues, are examining it. you know, at this point in time, and may make a decision before their fair share plans are due to COA. In the event that a planning area municipality conforms, and that would be at the time when they have adopted the regulations and master plan elements, etc., in order to make them conforming, once they have conformed, they can
unconform.
But what happens is, if the council, there are two ways this can happen. They stay in conformance until they revise their master plans, do any kind of revisions. And if they don't revise accordingly to the master plan, then they're no longer judged to be in conformance. The other action that can be taken is the council is required to re-examine our own master plan every 6 years. And when we do that and we make changes, they would have to reflect those same changes. Again, should they not do that, they would no longer be in conformance. 48 municipalities have received a final municipal build-out report. 72 have received their Module 1 build-out reports. Module 1 and 2 end up being the build-out reports. That's why we mentioned this. So many are still engaged. We would expect to get to the point where we have 75 build-out reports done. And those build-out reports are important for the transfer of development rights process. I'll talk about that in a few seconds a little more. This map shows you the notice of intent municipalities. So all of these, in shown in blue, are currently working with us under the Plan Conformance Grant Program to examine plan conformance. And you can see that they are, some of them are outside the preservation area, and obviously all of those except one in the preservation area. This map shows the municipal build-out reports that have been posted. The process here is, when we finish a build-out report, it is sent to the mayor of the municipality and the professional that they have put in charge of the work of doing the build-out reports. They have a 10-day period of time to just check that for any issues or any errors that they could address. At the end of the 10-day period, we post those publicly on our website. In the event that after that some issue is uncovered, as has been the case in a couple of these, we revise those documents accordingly. It is very much a partnership, these build-outs. We work to verify information so that when we get to the end of Module 1, we have a vacant land analysis that the municipalities and their professionals have evaluated, verified the information used, so that it's very much a team approach. And it's only in the second module that we apply the constraints of the plan that will then affect the final build-out results. This is a little more on those build-out reports. So what they do is they describe growth potential at full build-out. So it's not a limited time, we're saying full build-out. Now, of course, there are things that may change, such as the ability to have more infrastructure in the town. But so capturing a point in time, which is today's current conditions, we do a full build-out. We look at available land for septic system and sewer development, as constrained where applicable by utility capacity and water availability. So we look at utility service areas. They are municipality identified. We give them all the information we know, they verify it. The build-out model focuses on existing areas served, so it's sort of a reality. It doesn't say this is a sewer service area. We say these buildings are currently served. Those are the existing areas served. And then other eligible areas based on the regional master plan. So for an example, an eligible area would be, we'd be looking at the existing community zone as an eligible area for sewer. Potential developable lands, again, municipality identified. Here we're looking at, through this build-out model, we're looking at vacant lands, oversized or redevelopable where known, and for sewer areas, if sufficient unconstrained lands exist. So this gives us the sort of the future picture of what lands are potentially developable. We then look at the septic system yield, which determines by the LUC, the Land Use Capability Zone Map, and the HUC 14 sub-watershed, the total of vacant and oversized lots. And then we can apply septic system yield to that. We then look at utility capacity. So we look there at sewer and water and see if the demands exceed the capacity. Because it's a limiting factor analysis. If they do, we will limit the growth to the available infrastructure for that growth. And finally, we look at water availability. That's in the natural systems. This is looking at where we've said that areas are in deficit. And what we do there is we reduce the build-out estimate if the demands at a sub-watershed level exceed the water availability. So all of this build-out report really is a limiting factor analysis. First, what lands are available, and then what infrastructure to support development where those lands are available. So you keep applying it, the limiting factor, to determine what the build-out, for the future build-out, is for that municipality. And this is important for TDR, because this is where we see where there is capacity in systems, where we have infrastructure that has capacity, so that could be used. Any additional growth is always the will of the municipality, but this will help us begin to target towns where we see infrastructure and target them to see if they're interested in doing, in looking at TDR's feasibility analysis.
Are there any towns in this build-out reports? Is there any consideration given to the impact on the tax base?
The build-out reports are sort of factual what can happen. In terms of tax base, that really is a municipal, that's for municipalities to look at, because this is already limiting what their potential build-out is most likely going to be under their current master plans, which has tax implications, because obviously more growth, more services are needed, more schools, etc. So this, in a sense, would limit that from that perspective. There are concerns that towns will raise about commercial, but this basically shows what you can do within the limits of the land and the infrastructure. There are decisions towns must make then in terms of they could take septic yield, for example, and they can apply it to commercial if they wish. There are also other issues that aren't covered in the build-outs. So, for example, there's much redevelopment potential possible in the future that we don't capture at this level, we don't know it. If they know about redevelopment projects or they have designated redevelopment areas, they can tell us through the build-out report. But into the future, there may be more opportunities through the process of our Highlands redevelopment area site designation. So there are many unknowns that have to be uncovered, but this certainly gives them information. That's the actual tax analysis is going to be something that the towns will have to look at to see what the implications are. But yeah, this doesn't get to that level.
As far as the septics, does it utilize the existing zoning to determine the number of septic systems?
Doesn't actually use existing zoning. What it does is we look at at a hook level, we look at the available land there. Now you take, insofar as the analysis does take an existing zoning to determine what is the undeveloped portion, the oversized lot. But then afterwards we apply the densities that would be applied under the plan for the land use capability zone and the yield. So it really does ignore local zoning, as it should, because you're looking at the capacity of the land and the background nitrates, not at existing zoning.
So you base it on soils?
We base it on our background nitrates as done in our technical reports to support the regional master plan. Each of the zones has established background nitrates, which you don't want to go above those backgrounds. So we have different targets for the existing community zone, the protection zone, and the conservation zone. They each have a target you have to reach at that, but that is what determines your yields.
And those aren't consistent with state standards?
The state standard is 2 milligrams a liter. Our existing community zone is equivalent, except we use drought recharge in our model, which is more conservative than the DEP's model. And at the other two zones, no, we're more conservative than the DEP statewide, which is recognized by DEP in their wastewater management rules. And they actually allow for, where more information is available, they allow for that more detailed study to be used, that detailed analysis. And in fact, they establish their own backgrounds for the preservation area. That's where the 25 acres and 88 acres for development in the preservation area of the septic comes from. And the similar modeling is used. Just a quick status of the TDR feasibility grants. The Highlands Council has approved 10 TDR feasibility grants. At the last meeting, we did two more. So it's now Borough of Pagoda, they were added to it. You have Chester Borough, City of Clifton, Town of Clinton, Harmony Township, Opatcom Borough, Lopatcom Township, Oakland Borough. The other new one is Tewksbury Township and Washington Borough. So those 10 municipalities are currently using the TDR feasibility grants to study the possible potential to become a receiving. So in some cases, I know in the town of Clinton, it's sending out receiving in the one town, but they're studying it again through the build-out process where we see that there's greater capacity. They ask towns if they're interested in examining their potential. The interest is expressed by themselves in coming into this program. They do have a project that they're looking at, and they are interested in seeing if it would be feasible. So the interest is expressed by the municipality in entering into these into this grant program. At this point, what we're going to do is we're going to now enter in on the agenda. It would be item number 8 is the consideration of the resolution of the adoption of the HDC bank operating procedures. So what we'd like to do is take you through the background of, you know, what we've done on this and what changes have been made. And Jeff is going to lead that discussion.
Thanks, sir. The operating procedures have gone through several iterations now based on input from public comment, comments by bank board members, and back and forth with staff. The initial draft was released for public comment on May 26th. We got comments back on June 26th. Then we held the work session on July 2nd, where we had some fairly comprehensive discussions on the operating procedures as they stood at that time. Based upon that input, we've now gone and staff has revised the operating procedures to reflect the comments that we received from the directors at that meeting. So what I'm going to do is basically highlight the changes that we made based on our conversation on July 2nd. And if we need to, we can certainly bring up the actual draft on the screen for further discussion. Under Section 1, a director had suggested that as part of the purposes, we include there some language regarding the ability of the bank to administer an auction, such that it's not necessarily participating as a seller, so we made that change. Under Section 2, we revised two definitions. The definition of marketable title was revised to make it clear that we're not prohibiting the placing of a mortgage on the property, but we're only talking about liens or encumbrances that somehow would prevent the use or transfer of the property. So that's what that, where we're talking about, because the issue is raised about what is encumbrance. We're really focused, it doesn't mean a mortgage, but we're focused on liens or encumbrances that would somehow stymie the transfer or conveyance of the property. And then with respect to the definition of retired, we made it clear that any holder of an HDC may retire the credit. As it was previously drafted, it was left that the bank could retire, and it was brought up in some of the public comments, as well by some of the bank members, that, you know, a conservation organization could purchase credits, and it may choose to retire them such that they're no longer in circulation and could be used. So we made that change. Section 3 has been revised fairly substantially. We previously laid out some of the powers and responsibilities of the bank, but we felt that that was redundant in that we've already laid those out in the bank bylaws. So we completely revised that section to reflect this fact. And we didn't want to repeat them in the operating procedure. And then we further revised the section to clarify the responsibilities of the executive director. It basically builds on those powers, duties, and responsibilities that are set forth for the executive director under the bylaws. So we just sought to clarify here in the operating procedures.
Uh-huh.
Under section, yes?
Can you guys hear me at all?
Yes, we can, Susan.
Does that sound like here about every third word you're saying? I guess I'm going to have to jump off. Can I just tell you two concerns with these bylaws or with the operating procedures, and I'll make quick a call?
Yeah, go ahead, Susan.
One is, I still question that we are requiring landowners to notify the bank that use credit as collateral when they encumber the credit. I still think that's kind of big brother. I don't know why a landowner can't take out a loan at a bank, use credit as collateral without confirming the Highland account. I think there's some safeguards elsewhere that would prevent a landowner who splits the credit as collateral from being able to sell the credit. I mean, there's got to be title work done before it should be set in order to make sure the landowner has their title. So that's one comment. And the other one is late in this document when we're talking about the actual bidding for the bond stage. My only question here is page 15, item the F on the bid award 4. So once the highest bid established, the highest bidder will be awarded the maximum number available. If the maximum number is not available, then the bidder shall receive the minimum number. As you can see, we should give them as many as we can. You know, like if somebody put in a minimum bid for 100 credits and a maximum of 150, and we had 125, we should award them as many as possible, which is at least equal to their minimum, right? That was one piece of that. And then the second piece was, if the developer bid, we satisfy their maximum and there's credits left over, wouldn't we just go in descending order of the other bids? Because this says if there's more than one highest bidder, and I just didn't understand that second part. Wouldn't we just offer them in the bid, at the bid price, let's say a developer is a high bidder at $25,000 credit, right? And we satisfied all of his needs, and we still had credits left over, we turn around to the next highest bidder and say, well, you want to buy them at $25,000 apiece? You know, wouldn't we just go back and offer them to everybody else and keep that big order of credit? So, I hope you understand that question. And I'm going to have to jump off because I can't hear you guys enough to make sense of my presentation.
Okay, Susan. Paul, we noted it, and when it's appropriate for us to discuss those items, I'll make sure they get brought up again.
All right. I'm sorry for this conflict, and I will touch base with your office tomorrow and discuss whatever I think we're doing.
Okay. Thanks, Susan.
Thank you, guys.
Okay, Jeff.
Okay. So, under Section 4 with HDC certificates, we made a few changes here based on, again, the discussion on July 2nd. The first thing we did is we specified out that it's the board that adopts and revises the form and content of the Highlands Development Credit Certificate. That was previously under Section 3 of the prior draft of the operating procedures, and we pulled that in here because that is a responsibility that is not specifically set out in the bylaws, and we wanted to make sure that we captured that in the appropriate place. Under the applicability section, we revised it to make clear that any HDCs that are allocated to an eligible parcel by the Highlands Council may not be sold without first getting that certificate from the bank. We had some conversation about what the process is, and we wanted to make, again, try to make clear, and I tried to clarify the language, that you don't have a fungible credit until it's basically set forth in a certificate that's issued by the bank, where the bank has verified the allocated credits that you've received and that the appropriate conservation restriction has been recorded against the company. Right. Yeah, no Highlands Development credits. The way that language reads right now, no Highlands Development credit allocated to an eligible property by the Highlands Council may be sold, transferred, conveyed, or encumbered without first obtaining a Highlands Development credit certificate from the bank. And this language is also reflected in the letter that a property owner receives from the Highlands Council, where the property owner is receiving a formal allocation determination from the council. We then, additionally in section 4, we revised language regarding the conservation restriction criteria to say that the certificate may not be issued unless the executive director is satisfied that the conservation restriction prohibits the future development of the property. And then the new language that we included there is in accordance with the appropriate conservation restriction adopted by the Highlands Council. Previously, we had said that the conservation restriction as appended to these operating procedures, but we thought it would be clearer, and given the council's role in adopting those conservation restrictions, to use this language. In regards to HTC redemption, we revised the provision to state that a certificate may not be issued until no further project review by the Highlands Council is required. Several directors had concerns about the council's role in the municipal approval process, and we talked about call-up authority. This is just to be clear that when a developer is seeking to redeem credits for use in a TDR receiving zone, that the bank is not going to issue those certificates for that redemption until we know that the council does not have any additional review of that project. And there are a number of situations that we talked about at the previous meeting where that could arise. So we wanted to make that clear. And then finally, we revised language to state that a certificate does not need to be redeemed until a construction permit is being issued. So that's the timing for the redemption of certificates, where you're using a certificate to build a TDR bonus unit or bonus square footage in the case of non-residential construction.
You want to talk about Susan's comments?
Well, I thought what we'd do is let Jeff run through it, and then we'll open it up for discussion.
Under Section 6 on the purchase of HTCs, we deleted the word unique from the provision regarding when a bank may purchase HTCs in hardship cases. I believe John had suggested that use of the word unique didn't make sense. It was rather superfluous, so that was taken out. Staff deleted the requirement that an applicant for sale of HTCs set forth in their application why they believe that a purchase by the bank would satisfy one of the standards in the operating procedures. That has been deleted. With respect to hardship purchases, we revised that provision just to provide more clarity, and we can look at that. And then we added a new provision that allows the bank to adopt a policy to establish additional criteria for the prioritization of any purchase of Highlands Development credits. And you'll see that that is reflected, for example, in the draft resolution today about the initial purchase group. And then finally, under Section 7 on the sale of HTCs, we've completely deleted the provision allowing the bank to sell HTCs at no cost for public purpose. It was a general consensus at the last bank board meeting that that should be deleted.
So that's
it.
Scott's over to you now for...
Is that a PowerPoint also?
Yeah, we'll be back to...
Cruz, you may want to pull it up.
We'll be back to it for the conservation restrictions, but we're done on the procedures.
Okay, well, we know that at least one director has some issues with some of the items that Jeff just described. Does anyone want to missed anything else before we just go right to Susan's comments?
This is Rob Siegel. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, go ahead, Rob.
I have in front of me, as I understand it, today, two documents that I'm looking at. One is the resolution, which is to adopt these procedures.
Correct.
And to basically implement the acquisition program. And the second is the set of operating procedures that this resolution brings into force.
Correct.
And as I understand it from reading the operating procedures, these operating procedures can be amended, for instance, to take into account Susan's concerns without affecting the resolution. The resolution seems to be permissive in terms of revision of the operating procedures. So that way, we can approve the resolution to begin the program, even though the operating procedures can be, I don't want to say a work in progress, but are available for revision at future meetings without setting aside the resolution. Am I understanding all this correctly?
Right. Well, we're really not discussing the resolution right now. I think what I'm hoping to do is get consensus from the board that the operating procedures are sufficient, and if some more amendments need to be made, hopefully they're minor at this point, it came after the third draft. But I guess what I would suggest is if you could stay specific to the operating procedures, if you have comments on that document.
Yeah, I understand that, but that's it seems to me the important measure before the board today is the approval of the resolution. But my question is whether these operating procedures can be amended. I have a similar concern, not precisely the same as Susan's. Frankly, I'm not sure I understand Susan's concern, and that was something that I want to, have a better grasp of. But I've discussed with staff my concern about the lack of an appraisal process in the evaluation of the credit value of these subject properties for acquisition. And it seems to me that concern of mine is best addressed in the operating procedures, and that the resolution itself is not that this wouldn't necessarily have to interfere with the resolution, that I can approve the resolution knowing that the operating procedures can be adapted.
Okay.
In subsequent meetings.
Let me ask Eileen to comment on your first point, was whether it could be amended. I'm sure she'll want to comment on that, and maybe she can just move it to your second comment also, Eileen.
Ralph, in the operating procedures that are before you today, as and the purpose of the resolution in adopting those procedures, under Section 8 amendments, the board may, at its own initiative, or upon the recommendation of the executive director, periodically consider amendments to these operating procedures. So I think that...
Well, I'm looking at that, so that's what actually gave me... It seems to give me leeway on the resolution, because we can... If let's say, hypothetically, we make the change to these operating procedures at the very next meeting, that doesn't affect the resolution that we're approving, that we're being asked to consider today, right?
That is correct. You can adopt the procedures and they can be changed at a later date upon the decision of this council, of this board.
Okay. All right. That was actually the heart of my question, is to understand this, because I don't completely understand Susan's problem, but the fact that she has a problem is of concern to me. My own concern, which we've discussed, is the lack of a appraisal procedure that's comparable to the land acquisition programs, which I guess is something really best discussed in more detail with staff. Not necessarily have to do that at a public meeting, particularly since I'm having the same sorts of problems that Susan had in hearing the meeting. But I think you've clarified my question.
Okay, thanks, Ralph. Eileen, did you want to respond to Susie's comments?
I think
or Jeff?
I think, yeah, we'll Because if you wish to make changes today before you adopt, you can always adopt the resolution and we can make those changes that you direct us to make. So if you want to address those issues today, it is appropriate that you consider them today and then give us direction before you consider the resolution. So if what Jeff can do is he can pull up what we're discussing, because the operating procedures are now on the PowerPoint here, he'll pull them up. We can just go over what is written, what Susan's issue is, and then the board can direct us if you want us to amend it before you adopt the resolution. So Jeff, you take it to Susan's first comment.
Man, it's page 7.
Thank you.
On my document, 7.
I didn't have the opportunity to speak with Susan before the meeting briefly. So her concern with respect to the issue of requiring a property owner, requiring a HTC holder who pledges their credits as collateral to secure a loan to provide notice to this bank about that activity. My belief on this is that as the agency that's charged with recording and tracking all activity relating to Highlands Development credits, that part of that process is understanding and knowing what people are doing with the credits that they've been allocated and have received certificates for. So if someone is pledging, if someone is pledging their HTCs as collateral to secure a loan, we should be made aware of that and not have to then find out later on that they've taken these HTCs, they've pledged as collateral, and are now trying to sell it to someone else where they've already been encumbered through a loan process, so that we don't have to hear about it when now we're working with the holder of those HTCs and a potential seller in the transfer of those credits, and then find out these credits have been already encumbered because they were pledges as security. So,
Jeff, let me ask you this. I guess this is touching on Susan's point, and I hope you can hear me, because actually I can certainly hear you very well. If a subject landowner has a set of credits, how exactly is that a collateralized value that he can, apply to the bank? Presumably, a collateral value is something that can be, at some point, turned into, turned out for cash, something that can be turned into a liquid asset, in that the bank can seize these credits at default and then exercise, sell the credits itself to recover its cash. I'm presuming that's what we're talking about in terms of what you're anticipating the potential for collateralizing credit.
That's correct.
I don't know how a bank would do such a without contacting the Highlands Council to make sure why it finds out what a credit is. I mean, I don't know that they're going to collateralize credits based on somebody giving them the Highlands Master Plan. I would think any bank is going to contact. First of all, I can't imagine a bank actually accepting these credits as any kind of real collateral. I don't know that there's any precedence for that at all. But even if it were contemplated, how would the bank do something like that without contacting the Highlands Council and that you would know it? What is your concern here that you're trying to address with this regulation?
My concern is that we're aware of all activities relating to the transfer of Highlands Development credits, their conveyance. How are they being used? And yes, sitting here today, the likelihood that a bank may accept those as collateral might be limited. 5 to 10 years down the road, that may not be the case, where the bank, as value increases over time, they may very well be used to secure a loan. That being said, this agency, this bank, is charged with recording and tracking all activities relating to credits.
Oh, yeah, right, I see, that's correct. Right, it's irrelevant whether the bank is, the fact that the credit's being, in a sense, having a, you know, in some respects, having a lien placed against the credit, as I know that's not the right language, but that the credit is in some way being encumbered as collateral, the statute requires you to be made aware of that.
Correct.
What can a bank do if someone pledges it and, you know, it's accepted as collateral? What can a bank do? Are you going to come in and say, well, you know what, we think it's a bad deal for you, you can't do it?
No, the bank has no role. The bank is simply recording and tracking the activity of these credits. That's it.
Too much interference. I have to agree with Sid. It just seems like we're just trying to micromanage it. And what it is.
The concern would be then when this bank is required to review a receiving zone project and the credits that are being redeemed for that, then the potential for, the subsequent purchaser of those credits has credits that have been previously encumbered. Now what happens to that deal in the TDR receiving zone? It's simply ensuring that this bank is aware of the activities relating to credits.
When those people, those who sell their credits,
yeah, there's no way that this regulation, I guess some people are seeing this as a barrier on collateralizing credits, but that's not the, it does not the plan, it's simply a fair notification, right? It's not a,
it's a trapping method.
Like our bank will have an opportunity to say, oh, no, we don't want you to collateralize those credits, it's not.
That's correct, Robert. It's a tracking mechanism.
This is a notice provision.
Yeah.
Hold on a minute, Ralph. I got a couple other directors who want to speak on this. Mike?
Just a comment. I agree that the credits will have limited final value, at least initially. Secondly, I agree also that you do need the tracking mechanism to comply with your regulations, that it should be the least bureaucratic as possible. So I don't know what you could do to emphasize that process. It's purely just a recording mechanism. Nothing more. And that's what it should be making.
Thank you, Mike. John?
I was going to ask if it would be appropriate for us to entertain a resolution, to introduce the resolution, and then if members want to introduce amendments to make changes, Susan suggested or others, debate them and vote.
I'm okay with that. I was kind of getting the feeling that the staff was hoping that we had a tight document when the resolution came, but I'm okay with that also. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yes.
I think that we need to address the item 4 on page 15.
Well, I'll take John's advice on that. John, did you want to move that?
Sure.
The resolution. Do I have a second on that?
Awesome.
Okay, so we have motion and a second. We can discuss further. I guess I'd like consensus, though. Do we want to move through all the issues and then come back on that, or should we try and put each issue?
So that's my knowledge. It's a limited, there's a limited number of issues. So I think it's a good idea. What John was suggesting was that if someone isn't satisfied with this, that they make an amendment to say that it should do, and then we can work on
so
that.
So for the issue of the notification of the collateral, I think I had Ted and Susan against it. It seemed like I had concurrence on the others, so we can consider that we're going to keep that as written.
I don't agree with that.
Well,
okay. I think that it's true. Personal property that you own. I think there's other tracking mechanisms.
Jeffrey, do you feel that if this gets removed, that will then be in some type of a jeopardy?
The issue will be then making sure that we catch it on the back end. Obviously, both the buyer and seller are going to be doing their own due diligence. But when the bank is then going and issuing the transfer, the certificate and the transfer of these credits, we're going to have to know that, in fact, if they were encumbered, we can't allow that transaction to go forward. So the idea was that we were getting that information up front by the holder of the certificate so that we knew when we got to that next step, that next transaction, we were aware of that encumbrance. We may not be aware, and if we miss it and that transfer occurs, then we could have an issuance where the whole transaction should be voided. And obviously, we want to avoid that for the parties and creating that amount of confusion. That's the purpose for the procedure.
Okay, so that I'm clear on the procedures thing. If one of the board members, and it seems like we have a number of board members who feel strongly that this should not be as it's written, do I need to take a motion on that? How do we... But it does, I mean, how do we make that officially on that?
Just change the language a little bit. I mean, this is just being used for tracking purposes.
So if you make a motion to amend this, if you make a motion to amend it in this manner, then we can do so and then move on. If that's all it's for,
track, it's not use this mechanism to deny the person
no.
the opportunity to do it.
Correct.
But doesn't it really say that?
Yes.
Say that it's not for the purposes of you interfering with the actual transaction, that it's really for the purpose of tracking for the HBCs.
So we could add that language if that.
I would support the motion to that.
So you're making a motion to amend? Second.
Is there other comments on the motion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Abstain?
I abstain if you can hear me.
Okay.
No. You need five, right?
Yeah.
You need five to...
accept the motion. Okay. Is there any other comments or any other motions on this matter?
Scott, if I may I suggest just some language and see if this works?
Okay.
Basically, what we would insert before D1, right after, on D1, before the word within, and just simply say, for the purposes of tracking and recording within 30 business days. So that would be the language to specify that that's the purpose for which we're getting this information.
Okay.
Would you then remove 4? So the encumbrance, the word encumbrance, if 1 covers the user's collateral and 4?
Yes.
So John, Jeff's made a suggestion. I need a motion for someone to accept that suggestion.
Thanks.
So I have a motion. Do I have a second? Motion and second. Is there any other comments on this? All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed? Any abstentions?
Yeah, I have to abstain simply because I can't understand most of what you folks are saying.
Ralph, can I read it for you? Would you be able to hear if I read it for you?
Yeah, when one person talks, then the voice transmission comes over, but when multiple people talk, the power goes off.
Okay, under this section, it would now read, for the purposes of tracking and recording, within 30 days, etc. So then it would go on there, and we would be eliminating section 4 that read, in the case of a Highlands Development Credit pledged as collateral, the name and address of any person who has pledged a Highlands Development Credit as security on any loan or other obligation, the name and address of the lender, and the date, amount, and term of the loan or obligation, all of that is being taken out. So this is to show it as a recording mechanism and make that clear. That is the amendment that is before the board.
And that's your intention, basically, right? It's just a notification.
Correct.
Yeah.
So, Ralph, the question to you is, would you vote in the affirmative?
Yeah, I'll vote yes on that.
Okay, that would be a fifth yes vote. Yes.
That's all. Okay.
Great.
standing.
Okay, moving on to our next comment that Susan had made, unless someone else had something as we were working through the document.
I can use John's suggestion and you can come back to me next meeting.
My suggestion was we vote to adopt it today with whatever amendments we want to have in it, and then, as Ralph said, we can amend it any future meeting if you see cost.
Correct. Okay, Susan had a comment about the maximum versus the minimum bids. And once available, certificates were determined how to meet that.
Page 15.
Yes, page 15. Jeff, did you want to comment on that?
If you can bear with me one second, I just want to look at the previous draft.
Okay.
Shown on the board here as section 4. Ralph, if you have the document in front of you, it is starts on page 14, section F, bid awards. At the top of the next page, it's number 4, page 15.
Page 15, okay.
In the previous version of the operating procedures, I know several bank board members had concerns about the language of their item 4, which said, once the highest per unit bid is established, the highest bidder will be awarded the total number of credits specified in his or her bid. The concern was that, well, what happens if the total number that they want is not available for purchase, so we should have them establish a maximum and a minimum. So I was trying to revise the language to reflect that in the highlighted language there. So basically, if they specify a maximum number in their bid, and that number will be awarded if possible, i.e. there's that many credits available, and if the maximum number cannot be awarded, then they'll at least receive their minimum number that they've specified. If that was the purpose of the language. Then I think Susan's comment then goes to really the next aspect of that, in that, well, how do we then flow down if there are credits remaining as part of the auction or sale?
She's correct. If someone's saying they want to buy 150 credits and there's only 125 available, maybe the person between 100 and 150, there's 125 available, you should be able to give them 125 and not limit it to 100. Is that what we're saying?
That's how I understand.
So why not? Then the bidder shall receive the greatest number up to the maximum number of highly developed credits specified.
Ted, if you remove the word minimum, does it work? They shall receive the number of highly developed credits specified in his or her bid.
Yeah. Well, I think that's the case where it's between two minutes.
I can understand stating a minimum, but and a maximum. I can understand that, but I have to agree with Susan also at this point that you know, if the Midland number can be reached,
if you change the word minimum to available, then the bidder shall receive the available number of pilot's development credits specified in his or her bid. So they get what's ever available.
Sure.
The maximum or whatever's available.
Because if there was the 150 available and that's all, and that person walked away with them all, you'd still be pleased with the sale. So if disposing of everything available.
Then with the second part, how could it mean that? More than one highest bidder.
If two bid at the same price. Two bidders bid $25,000 per credit.
Okay, do I have concurrence on that? Do I need an amendment, a motion to amend that? Reflect the verbiage change?
What motion? Make a motion to amend.
Thank you, Ted. A second? Motion second. Any other comments on it?
Do you want this paragraph to available? Is that what you're
saying? Can I ask you just to reiterate that one more time?
Sure, I'll read it. So, under item 4 on page 15, in the first sentence, read, once the highest per unit bid is established, the highest bidder will be awarded the maximum number of Highlands Development Credits specified in his or her bid, if possible. If the maximum number of Highlands Development Credits specified in his or her bid cannot be awarded, then the bidder shall receive the available number of Highlands Development Credits specified in his or her bid.
Shouldn't it be the maximum available?
Minimum available would work also. It's available. So we have available. Okay, so any other comments on that? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Same. Motion carries. Okay, and lastly, same page, 5C. Susan, I believe, had a issue with 5C also.
We don't know what Susan's issue was with this section.
Yeah, that's good. I don't recall also. I just made a note that she had an issue.
I think what Susan was getting at with respect to her second comment on this, was that under 5, I guess she would probably, I don't mean to put words in Susan's mouth, would be to suggest that in the event that any Highlands Development Credits remain, the executive director would probably offer them to the next highest bidder. I think that was what she was suggesting.
I think she was suggesting at the highest price.
Yeah. I would agree that it should be at the highest price, because I hate to be the guy who ain't bidding at the highest price. So
I think that's what 5 says. It's
that's what
most people to the highest bid.
So that's the highest bid.
Okay. I'm okay with that. Did you want to reread that? Then I'll ask for a motion.
I don't think there's any changes being offered, correct?
No, you can have to check that. Okay. Any other directors with any comments then? Let me get a document before I open to the public for comment. Hearing none, I'm going to open it to the public. Is there any member of the public who'd like to speak to this resolution that we're debating right now? state your name for the record.
Ellen Heinrich, speaking for the New Jersey Farm Bureau. There are a number of good changes that have been made, and I hope the bank is satisfied with what reflection of what they said at the last meeting. I'm concerned, or we're concerned, that the paragraph about the duties of the bank was removed, and I wonder, I can see how it might be redundant, but would you want to add section A, the duties of the bank can be found in the bylaws section such and such. This procedure may be the only thing anybody reads. I mean, the bylaws go in the bottom drawer someplace, and not everybody in the credit game is going to be reading the bylaws. So I think if it would be clearer, we would prefer that you would list the tasks and responsibilities of the board, just to make it very clear. But if you really are opposed to that, then at least referring people to the bylaws, I think, would help. And again, we're still concerned that the criteria for the financial hardship is too limited. It does say, but not limited to, so that helps. But it seems to me, and perhaps some of the others on the board could, you know, chime in if you have the same experience, that the financial problem that is most devastating to the farms is when the mortgage is foreclosed or loan is foreclosed. And also when the farmer or landowner dies and there's no good provision for inheritance, and the federal and state governments are on the doorstep asking for a lot of money. It seems to me that should be listed as an extenuating circumstance.
Thank you. Any other member of the public like to speak to this matter? State your name for the record.
Deborah Post. The operating procedures that have been presented today provide excessive control over the HDC marketplace to the executive director, a state unelected employee. Marketplaces do not function well with dictatorial governmental controls. The invasive and overly restrictive regulations inherent in the operating procedures de facto will ensure that an open and competitive marketplace for HDCs will simply never emerge. Without an HDC marketplace that is open and competitive and functioning, there will never be even a hint of just compensation to the landowners. It almost appears at times that the goal of this bank is to ensure that just compensation never appears. I heard comments today arguing that a flawed document with which there are still many disagreements should be adopted for the sole reason it can be amended or changed later. You are basically saying that you should vote for something with which you don't agree for the sole purpose of just doing something, even if what you are doing is wrong and possibly stupid, to use a word our president has thankfully brought back into use. Consequently, I recommend that those board members who do not fully agree with all the procedures vote no until the right answer is actually put on the table for you to vote on. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other member of the public?
David Show, I'm going to object again to the Highlands Council and this board sharing the same professionals. It gives them ample opportunity to execute the total control that they want, to sweep under the rug whatever they felt should be swept under the rug. You have no independent voice to guide you at all. And to give you an idea of what you're up against with establishing TDR sending zones and all of that sort of stuff, I have before me a proposal from the town of Clinton concerning the potential transfer for which they were awarded $23,500, the potential transfer of plus or minus 35 acres of sending area within the town that is environmentally constrained with steep slopes, blah, 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 floodplain buffers, carbonate rock. But this is what they want to transfer and pay somebody for to another area of town. This proposal was sent to the Highlands Council March 26, 2008, with a promised delivery of a report as to this in 4 months. So we're rapidly approaching a year overdue. This Highlands Council Bank, whatever you want to call it, is overdue. The adoption of the master plan is overdue. It seems that time has no relevancy if the accrual of benefits and paychecks are a function of time, not the achievement of the goals. We're just having more of the same. Time means nothing to those people, including any of you, quite frankly. You have no skin in this game at all. So I really don't know what you're doing here, because you're a couple of years overdue.
Thank you. Any other member of the public like to speak to this matter?
Julia Summers, New Jersey Highlands Coalition. There are a number of people, I'm sure, who are very anxious for you to move forward with these operating procedures so that you can deal with some hardship cases as soon as possible. I appreciate that you can come back and fix things that don't work in these operating procedures, and that seems eminently sensible. I hope you don't do it too often, because people will be experiencing whiplash and will not know what the rules are for operating. But you've got to take a first step forward. You've got to begin this process. So I urge you to move forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other member of the public like to speak? Hearing none, I'm going to close the public portion. Okay, members, is there any other comments to this resolution that we have on the table right now? Before I take action. Okay, call the vote on that one then. The resolution to accept the operating procedures for the Highlands Development Credit Bank. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carries. Thank you. Okay, we have another resolution to consider.
So, Mr. Chair, can we ask if Ralph is still on the phone and how he voted so we can record it, please?
Ralph, did you hear me on that vote? I'm not sure that your vote was recorded.
I'm not going to lie. I didn't realize we were voting.
Okay. I'll give you an opportunity. How would you like to vote on the matter of accepting the operating procedures?
Well, is this the operating procedures themselves, or is this the underlying resolution?
This is the resolution authorizing the operating procedures.
Yeah, let me see. So this is resolution 2009, agenda item number 6.
It's listed as agenda item number 5. It is indeed agenda item number 8, but it's listed as 5. Apologies.
So, Ralph?
I want to make sure I'm voting on the right thing. It says Highlands Development Credit Bank Initial HDC Purchase Program.
No, it is. It is the Highlands Development Credit Bank Operating Procedures. Well, we've been discussing it. We have the two amendments which are passed.
I'm abstain.
Okay. Abstain.
I was supposed to stand without abstention because I wasn't able to hear the proceedings.
It passes. Okay, we're going to move on then. We have another resolution to consider. Eileen?
Okay. the second resolution before you today is the resolution 2009. It is actually agenda item number 9, Highlands Development Credit Bank initial HDC purchase program. It's okay with you, Scott, I'd go just to the now therefore be resolved section so we all know what we're voting on, what you're voting on.
Okay.
Now therefore be it resolved by the Highlands Development Credit Bank that the bank hereby establishes its initial HDC purchase program, which shall focus on only those parcels of land whose owners satisfy the extenuating financial circumstance criteria established by the bank and its operating procedures adopted pursuant to resolution 2009, resolution we just did. For purpose of this initial HDC purchase program, the bank shall prioritize the purchase of HDCs in the following manner. A. The bank shall give first priority consideration to any property that comprises a major Highlands development that would have qualified for an exemption pursuant to paragraph 3 of subsection A of section 30 of the Highlands Act, but for the lack of a necessary state permit as specified in subparagraph B or C as appropriate of paragraph 3 of subsection A of section 30 of the Highlands Act, and for which an application for such permit had been submitted to the Department of Environmental Protection and deemed by the department to be complete for review on or before March 29th, 2004, and which satisfies the hardship criteria. That additions of the request of bank members. B. The bank shall give second priority consideration to any parcel of land whose owner only satisfies the hardship criteria. C. The bank shall give third priority consideration to any parcel of land that only satisfies the requirements of subparagraph A above. D. Within each of the priority levels set forth above, of paramount consideration is the protection of parcels of land which are of significant ecological or agricultural importance consistent with the regional master plan. As the order established in those four was directed by yourselves, and that's why it was changed to reflect that. Number three, the executive director or her designee is hereby authorized to begin the initial HDC purchase program consistent with this resolution, including the adoption of any necessary application form, the review of such applications, and the making of recommendations to the bank for approval of HDC acquisitions. And finally, four, the bank shall make offers to acquire HDCs under this initial HDC purchase program beginning in January 2010 or upon the New Jersey State Treasury appropriating the funds necessary to effectuate this program, whichever is later.
We had Jeff, if you want to identify, we saw one little correction right in advance.
Sure. This is under item one under the now therefore clause. You'll see that we call it the extenuating financial circumstance criteria, but then under items two, we call it hardship criteria. I would just suggest that we change for consistency purposes. We keep the language at extenuating financial circumstance criteria so that it carries through the entire resolution. So there's no issue about what criteria we're referring to.
John?
There's another clarification I think is needed, Richard. Item 2C says the bank should give third priority consideration to any parcel that also satisfies the requirements of subparagraph A above. But what it means is the first part of subparagraph A.
That's correct.
Not the hardship part.
Right.
So, wording is accomplished.
Well, why don't we get a motion also on this now that our name is read. Do I have a motion to accept this resolution by any member?
Yes, I will.
Thank you. Do I have a second?
With the changes?
Well, we have to, it has to be a formal resolution before we discuss it. Is that correct?
Yeah, you make a motion, then you can make a motion to amend.
Okay, I'll second. Thank you. Now we can discuss. Go ahead.
John, it's a nail on the head for me as far as 2C. I'm not sure what it's trying to say. It's redundant with A.
It was meant to only refer to really the first part of A up through in the very last line, the would end at March 29, 2004.
I think the simple amendment would be it satisfies the requirement of subparagraph A above and does not satisfy the extenuating circumstances. Basically, you're taking C as written, subparagraph A above, and does not satisfy the extenuating financial circumstance criteria.
Any other comments?
Yeah, also, in light of what we just heard, maybe we can put something in about the state issues. So, this is the portion just to ask for could be two. Parents' issues.
Well, the purpose of the operating procedures, it's on the whereas, on the first page,
right,
has number one and number two. Those are the criteria for the operating procedures, which are fairly broad. It's including but not limited to in number two there.
Right, I see.
So it was direct. It was purposely written to give the bank authority to deal with particular circumstances. That's our recommendation.
Any other board members' comments? We're open it to the public. Okay. Is there any member of the public who'd like to speak to this resolution? Any?
Good afternoon, Monique Purcell, Department of Agriculture. As I'm reading this resolution, it looks like the initial purchase program will be limited to only those with financial hardship. I thought that it was agreed at the last meeting in July that it would be open to everyone but then prioritized internally. Am I reading something wrong under the first, now therefore be it resolved? Establishes the initial purchase program which will focus on only those parcels of land whose owner satisfied the extenuating financial circumstance criteria. I thought that the program would be open to everyone who qualifies yet, but then prioritized in the order described on the back of the page internally.
Finish with public comment and then get selected. Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Any other member of the public would like to speak to this resolution?
Okay.
Deborah Post. Priority is being given to the developers. It is, of course, only developers who experience hardship. By approving this priority, this board is stating affirmatively that the investment-backed expectations of a land speculator are more worthy than the investment-backed expectations of a multi-generational farmer. Please note that a farmer will virtually never qualify for the hardship criteria, so farmers are being carved out of the HDC program. The words land of significant ecological or agricultural importance consistent with the regional master plan have little real meaning. The protection zone is ecologically important. Am I wrong? The conservation zone is agriculturally important. Am I wrong? The conservation zone and the protection zone are virtually the entire regional master plan after you take out the community development areas, which of course will never have HDCs issued for them. So what do these words really mean? And who gets to decide which have great importance? Is this language really nothing more than a catch-all to allow political decisions of importance for those capable of providing bribes and big mitigation cost incentives and other politically connected people? I find the language here highly offensive because it It just shows how the process is really going to work.
Thank you. Any other member of the public like to speak?
I think in resolution number six, I think by adding the phrase at the very last part 2A, and which satisfies the hardship criteria, is a violation of the act. The paragraph before that provides relief specifically to those people so described. And to couple it with a hardship criteria, I think is quite simply a violation of the act. Thank you.
Any other member of the public like to speak?
No.
Helen Heinrich again. It seems to me at the working meeting, you all did agree that anyone could apply. However, the bank would prioritize based on what it says in the resolution. I don't see any language saying that you can't, but it does really imply that if you can't meet that criteria, don't even bother to fill out the paperwork. And I'm not clear on that page, section 2C, which reads like a repetition of A. Did you vote to add the words without the extenuating financial criteria? I know Tom said that's what it meant, but is there an amendment to that to make it? I think you should change that to make it correct.
Thank you. Any other member of the public like to speak? Hearing none, I'm going to close the public portion. So back to comments amongst ourselves, board. John?
I'd like to suggest that.
Go ahead.
With combine 1 and 2 it may now therefore be a resolve. So it would say, the bank hereby establishes its initial HDC purchase program, which shall, and that goes to item 2, which shall establish priorities with the purchase of HDCs in the following manner, colon. And then under A, would say, the bank shall give first priority consideration to any property that meets both of the following two criteria. One comprises a major island development up through March 29, 2004, and two satisfies the hardship criteria.
Yeah,
which establishes or satisfies the extenuating circumstances. The extenuating financial circumstances criteria established by the bank and its operating procedure. Then the final piece of the change would be in item C, say the bank should give third priority consideration to any parcel of land that fully satisfies the requirements of subparagraph A1. Okay, so.
Okay, so your attempt would be to remove having it appear as if the initial program was set up just for the extenuating circumstance.
Right. That would be one intent. The other would be to make the criteria, the priority setting.
Then we're just kind of stating what our goal is. So you're making that as a motion?
Proposed
amendment. So you move that. Do I have a second to John's amendment?
Sir, anything we can just add? We did talk about not just including we're limited to the these financial hardships. Anyone can apply. These
these would be given priority.
Right, so my proposal would be to take out the language in number one that says, shall focus on priority process.
That's John's intention. Do I have a second?
Second.
Motion second. Any comments on the amendment? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Any abstentions?
Abstained.
Okay, motion carries. Okay, so we still have the resolution at hand. Is there any other board member comments before I call the vote on that?
I just have a question. Based on public comment, as opposed to this issue, have they had an opportunity to speak to staff about those concerns? Have we made an attempt to incorporate that their concerns into any of these documents?
I would say that they've been fully engaged in the process since the very beginning and have made their comments known at various meetings of the Highlands Council, the TDR Bank, and the committee meetings that the TDR committee held as well. So their comments have been considered throughout the process.
No, during the comments at the end. Okay. Is there any other board member? Director, with any comments before I call the vote on this? Okay, I'm going to call the vote on this resolution. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Any abstentions?
Abstain.
Motion carries. Okay, at this point, the board is going to work a little bit. We're going to discuss, I assume Eileen will continue the discussion on the TDR conservation restrictions. That's the status of what the council is doing with that.
What I will do is I'll just bring you up to date. Thank you, Mr. Chair, on this, and then Jeff will take you through the changes that have occurred in the conservation restriction language. So the initial draft conservation restriction was released for public comment on April 17th, 2009. Public comment was accepted through April 30th, 2009. Staff revised the conservation restrictions and further public comment was sought through July 3rd, 2009. Staff again revised the conservation restrictions based on that public comment, comments from our state agency partners, and input from Highlands Council members and HDC Bank directors. So we did have a lot of back and forward. I would also emphasize that we did talk with Susan in her role as SADC, the Set Up Agriculture Development Committee Executive Director, and Monique Purcell from the Department of Agriculture as well. So they were once again revised as a result of all of that comment, and the Highlands Council is to consider the conservation restrictions at its September 17th, 2009 meeting. So what we'd like to do now is just bring you up to date on the changes. Jeff's going to go through those that have been made as a result of comments received.
And I'll just go quickly through those changes. We began with adding a definition section, which was not in previous versions of the conservation restriction for clarity purposes. So we added that based on comments from a number of commentors. Where a property owner foregoes applicable single family dwelling exemption in the Highlands Act, the restriction now clearly sets forth what bonus will be applied to the property's net yield calculation, and that is based on where that parcel is located. Is it located in a high, moderate, or low priority area, either agricultural priority area or conservation priority area? We revised the provision regarding existing uses to explain whether or not such uses can be expanded, depending on what that use is, where it's located. Staff revised the provision regarding enforcement. Revised provision regarding costs of enforcement. Now it states that those costs will be borne by the property owner, but only after the property owner has failed to cure a violation based upon notification from the Highlands Council. Staff deleted a provision requiring the property be kept free and clear of liens and encumbrances. And we added a provision that the restriction may only be amended for the protection of public health from safety, including transportation safety improvement projects, upon the determination of the grantee here in the state of Highlands that such amendment is necessary. So those were the significant changes that we made from the third to the fourth version of the conservation restriction, which the council will be considering at 6 weeks.
Okay, thank you. The purpose of bringing this to your attention is to show you that because there was much discussion at your last meeting, we had anticipated being able to bring you this information at the meeting of this council. And so it was put off at the council level so that you would know that we did respond to members' issues that were raised here at further meetings and further meetings with Chair Scott to go over these issues. And these are the resulting changes. This will then, you have before you the language of the different restrictions, and these will be considered by the Highlands Council September 17th. If you have additional comments now, of course, but if otherwise, if you want to send us something, have more concerns, we will bring those concerns to the council.
Okay. Are there, on the violations part, are there criteria set up in there for like...
How about if we pull it up to show you, Gail? I think it's better so that you can see that I'm a yes. We did work, a lot of that work was done with the Department of Ag and SCDC to go over that issue.
So, Dale, it's here in paragraph 13. If the grantee reasonably determines that the grantor has violated the terms of this deed of conservation restriction and grantor fails how to cure the violation, the grantor agrees to reimburse grantee for any reasonable costs incurred by the grantee in enforcing the terms of the restriction. And then, including without limitation, reasonable costs of suit, attorney's fees.
So the question would be, where does it, what's reasonable? Is that going to be established? You know, if you, I can just go from my CADB experience that like, okay, there's a violation and there's a pile of junk in the field and, you know, it's spring, kicking it out for 4 months. And, you know, so is there, you understand where I'm coming from?
Yes.
That time, I guess, is what I would certainly need for somebody to take care of.
Right, and so, trying to build in flexibility and not specify, you know, if it's not corrected within X days or whatever, but that would be left to the discretion of the council in this case to determine whether that violation has been adequately cured. Right now, that would be left to council.
So, can council actually go out of all of the inspectors? Have you go out first?
Well, the council staff.
Council staff. So, would there be anybody on council staff? Would you look for somebody that's familiar with, I guess my problem is, are you familiar with what happens on a farm?
We asked.
The council staff isn't familiar with what happens on a farm. I can only speak on a farm point of view. And that's how county ag development boards work is they have people on there that are familiar and the staff can bring it back to those people. You might go out and find the violation and bring it back.
We allowed for the delegation to CADBs and in fact also discussed with Susan Pratt that the SADC is just now because we do recognize exactly what you're saying. Susan said that they would definitely be willing to help us, but she did have to point out that they too have concerns about staffing and ability to take on the extra work, but certainly it's something we're going to continue to work with her.
Dale, just to address that point, in paragraph 11, where we talked about the grantee being the state and the Highlands Council has the ability to enforce the restriction, but the Highlands Council may transfer, assign, or otherwise convey the conservation restriction to a public entity, which is defined in the definition section as an agency of the state or political subdivision thereof, so county, municipality, to facilitate the enforcement of the restriction, providing the enforcement by a public entity occurs upon approval of the Highlands Council. So we have kind of a checks and balances where the enforcement authority is going to be.
Theoretically, they can assign Morris County to the Morris County people.
Correct.
State Morris.
That's correct.
Staff to do that.
Correct.
If there's any dispute, is there any sort of resolution process? Some staff goes out, I think this is wrong. Farmer says no, it's perfectly fine.
That's where it would be good if it got referred to something like county board.
Right.
Board there, then the staff might have a problem. But the staff gathers the information and brings it, and the board members, from all the backgrounds, that.
I think that's built in already. The cure language was designed to do exactly that. It's to require that before any court action, enforcement action takes place, that there's an ability to cure. So it provides for any potential violation the ability of the property to cure the situation.
But if there's a disagreement, the property owner says, wait, but that's not a violation.
But that would be in response to that, the concern, and they would say there's no need to cure because it's not a violation. That would allow that to occur.
And then you'd be able to go to the county as a third party.
If it's delegated that way, correct.
They decide, I don't think that's
it would be our preference to work with CADB and SADC. We're well used to the fact that they do determine. They are often, at least in these disputes, they step in to resolve. So that is our preference to work with them.
Okay. Any other questions about the conservation restrictions? Okay, then, looking at our agenda, we're at the public comment portion, unless there's any other comments. We'll go to the public portion, then we'll come back to the board. Is there any member of the public who'd like to speak to any matter at this point? Never? State your name for the record, please.
Deborah Post. I'd like to direct my comments to this gentleman here, and I apologize for not knowing your name. Ms. Swan responded to your earlier question by saying that I had been fully engaged, quote unquote, in the process. This answer highlights the lack of genuineness and integrity of this entire process. Mr. Weingart uses the stopwatch to interrupt our comments at precisely 3 minutes. We are expected to respond to thousands of pages of plans, draft, regulations, comments, workshops, technical reports in 3 minutes. Mr. Whitenack regularly refused my participation in the council TDR committee meetings. I, in fact, applied for a position on this board. I hold a Harvard MBA with honors, was a managing director at a major Wall Street firm, investment firm, and have 20 years of investment capital market experience with a specialty in innovative security structurings. Mr. Weingart didn't even provide me with the courtesy of an interview. The truth is that this process is a fraud. The staff's goal is to ensure that the landowners remain burned. We both know that there is not $6 billion to fund the just compensation required to make all the landowners whole. I call this the Potemkin Bank Board precisely because it is truly meant to be a facade to disguise the ugliness of the Highlands Act. I really would ask you to keep this reality in your mind as you vote here on this board, because we do need some support. Thank you.
Any other member of the public like to speak? Dave?
I concur with Debbie Post. David Shope, and I concur with Debbie Post's comments. We have routinely attended the meetings here and have been routinely ignored in terms of how our issues are addressed. You know best, don't you? You just know best because this act was passed partially, I'm sure, due to the false promise by Senator Smith when asked by Senator Cardinale about the funding for just compensation, which is a just a joke, even though the language is contained in the act. It is a joke. And Senator Smith said that he would show Cardinale and others the money. We have not seen the money. The money does not exist. It was a phony promise, in my opinion, and my opinion is justified by the fact that we have not seen the money. You are just relying on a rather confused batch of court decisions concerning takings and other matters. I'm one of nine plaintiffs that is currently suing you, the state of New Jersey, et cetera, based on issues that that hopefully we will get the court to hear. Perhaps not a New Jersey court, because after all, this is New Jersey. And also, if you were to take the list of people who voted for this act and cross off those who are convicted or indicted, the majority would shrink. And perhaps the others, when they looked at the shrinking majority, would have changed their vote. But anyhow, we are where we are, and this vote was taken by a whole bunch of people who are now in jail. Hopefully they will be joined by others shortly. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other member of the public like to speak, Julian?
Julia Summers, New Jersey Highlands Coalition. Just two requests. The most recent Highlands Council, the Executive Director's report was very quickly, the PowerPoint was very quickly put online. I request that we have the same thing today. It's very helpful to have the PowerPoint online. The other question is, it is very hard to follow the changes to the conservation easement without being able to read it. So that too, if that could be put online, ideally with track changes showing, but if that's not acceptable, at least having it online so that we can review it to prepare for the 17th. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Any other member? No?
Ellen Heinrich, thanks to Julia for bringing up my question, which is, as you know, the conservation restriction language is absolutely critical to the farm landowners. And what's the process now? Is it going to go online? If we have questions or concerns about it, does that go to Highlands Council for their consideration on the 17th? And the sooner you can get it up there, the better. The changes sound like we're making progress, but we need to see it word for word. So if you can please answer that question. Secondly, you must do something about the mics and getting us all plugged in here. I mean, to have someone on the phone who can't vote because he can't hear what's going on is a total waste of his time, and he's a very important member of your board. Can you change to microphones on people's shirts so that they don't have to continually do this? Some of you we can hear, and some of you we don't hear one single word back there. And it's necessary to hear you all. You have a lot of very important things to say. We want to hear every word, and anybody on the phone, it's a waste of time if they can't hear and participate. So please change this to some kind of microphone that everybody will be willing to be plugged into. Thank
you. Great. Do you want to tell Helen to do
it? Yes, just on the PowerPoints, it is part of our protocols. We always post our PowerPoints. Sometimes it takes a little longer than other times because of issues with PDFing, with the mapping, and we put citations on the last one. I think it was the day after we can plug them up. But we wanted those citations because it gave the public the opportunity to see where we got the information from, the sources, so that they could get it. So it takes time sometimes, but it is routinely. What we do is we post on the calendar date the PowerPoint used that day.
And then with, in terms of posting the conservation restriction language, we will do that. It again is part of protocol established that before the council or in the case of HDC, when you're making decisions about issues, we post that information in advance. So in advance of July 17th, we will have this conservation restriction language up. We'll make an effort to get it up earlier because I realize that there's a lot of interested parties. And comments, if anybody has comments, even though that period is closed, we are routinely accustomed to receiving written comments from the public and from interested parties, etc. So if you would direct those to me as well, please. So we will be doing that, so that answers that question.
Okay. Any other members of the public like to speak?
Dave Pfeiffer, Association of New Jersey Environmental Commissions. On the subject of the conservation easement language, one of the things that we've known about easements forever is that they are inherently flexible documents. I would suggest that you consider your language as basic minimums for your easements, and that you allow some flexibility in writing specific provisions that reflect the actual character of the land being preserved. One of the ways to do that is to have a recitation in the easement agreement of the conservation values that are present on the property, mature forests, and so on and so forth. The idea that you can craft a single easement to anticipate all contingencies is just not realistic. Land is a very variable thing. Another thing that I would suggest is that the easement contain a reference and a requirement for the production of what's called a baseline study or baseline information that would chronicle the actual conditions on the property at the time the easement was made. I can't tell you how critical this is because changes do occur on properties. And the fact is that unless you know what was there first, it's going to be very difficult 5 years or 10 years or in perpetuity to know whether or not changes have been made by people or by nature. So that baseline documentation also requires an archival function here at the council or at the bank to make sure that that information is always there. I would recommend that you take a look at ANJAC's website on the subject of land preservation. There is a very good paper by James Wise, one of the most experienced writers of easements in New Jersey, that explains what should be in an easement, what kinds of topics should be covered, and how. That's there for you, we hope to take a look at it. We look forward to commenting on it, and we do appreciate the effort and the use of TPR in preserving land. So I agree, it's a very valuable and critical function to have this language right. So again, thank you for your time and energy on this, and we're here to help you in any way we can.
Thank you. Any other member of the public like to speak? Seeing none, I'm going to close the public portion. Any other comments from the directors before I accept a motion to adjourn? Anyone? I have a motion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay, we're adjourned. Thank you.